Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Delusions of Grandeur here on the Journey Into podcast. This episode's going to be a little bit different. Rish and I will both be speaking to you, but it'll be at separate times. A few weeks ago, Rish texted me and said he heard something that he couldn't get out of his head about character assassin Luke Skywalker. Later, he told me he spent way too much time writing an essay on the subject, and I understand that now. Then later, he shared his frustration at how long it was taking to edit together the video that he had made. He finally got it all produced and out into the world. You may have already heard or seen or read this essay if you follow Rish's Patreon feed or the Rish Outcast podcast or his blog. Rish also wanted to play it here on a Delusions of Grandeur episode, which I'm glad to oblige. If by some strange chance you are listening to this podcast and have not heard Rish's essay elsewhere, you're in for a treat. Rish also asked me to add a little commentary afterwards, so there will be some bonus content here in this podcast, if you can call it that. But anyway, let's go ahead and play Rish talking to you about character assassination Luke Skywalker.
Rish Outfield here. I don't really have any time to do this. I've got a lot of work. I've got obligations that I'm not fulfilling. But I can't help myself. I heard something yesterday, and I just can't get it out of my head. It just keeps repeating and repeating, and I've got to address it. Got to say something. I guess that's passion. When you say, you know, I've got all these things that I need to do, but I absolutely need to do this as well. So, here's an essay for you that I don't have time to write, but I'm making time for because my brain won't leave me alone. A lot of people don't like the newest Star Wars episode, The Last Jedi. And you know, maybe I shouldn't say a lot of people. There are some very vocal people who did not like it. And to say they didn't like it is an understatement. And live and let live. That should be my attitude. You don't have to like what I like. We can all coexist, even if you believe one thing and I don't believe it. But yesterday, I'm into action figures, mostly for selling them, but I do occasionally buy some for myself. And there's a new wave of Last Jedi figures that are about to come out. And yesterday, a guy said, I'm going to order this set, but I don't want the Force Awakens Rey, and I certainly don't want the character assassination Luke Skywalker. And to be honest, that's pretty clever, calling him character assassination Luke Skywalker. I'll give that guy the benefit of the doubt and assume that he made it up, rather than just hearing it somewhere else and regurgitating it. Like I continue to hear people refer to Avatar as Dances with Smurfs. That was only ever clever once. And then, when people started repeating it, it wasn't clever anymore. But, as I was trying to say a minute ago, live and let live. You don't have to like what I like. You don't have to like The Last Jedi. You don't have to like me. Hate is a great motivator. Just ask anybody who ever lifted a sword or a Bible or a white pillowcase. But, like Resistance Tech Rose said, we win not by fighting what we hate, but saving what we love. Having said that, I couldn't get it out of my head. It just kept repeating in my mind over and over again. Character. Assassin. Nation. Luke Skywalker. Until finally I thought, if I could just push pause on time, so that time did not continue to move forward. I would do that, and I would sit down and I would write an essay about this. And I put it off, and I tried to do some work. But after 20 minutes or so, I made a sound, and I set aside my work. I sat down and I started this. Okay, cards on the table. I quite enjoyed The Last Jedi. But let me go a step further and say that I loved The Last Jedi. Now, I recognize that there are issues with it, especially in the middle of the movie. When I talked about it on my podcasts, I've complained that the Canto Bite sequence is straight out of the prequels, and in my own vernacular, that's quite a negative. And now I've got to interrupt myself. The last comic convention I went to, there was a panel that Pablo Hidalgo was giving. He's part of the Lucasfilm Story Group. And after the presentation, he opened it up for questions. And a dude marched up to the microphone, and he said, "First off, I have to say that I love the prequels. And if you don't, then you need to grow up." And then he continued with whatever question he had to ask. And this, I'm not going to go as far as to say that it infuriated me. But whatever's just one notch lower on the totem pole than infuriated is, that's what I felt. I don't remember his question, and I don't care. At that moment, I was tempted to stand up, go to the microphone and say, "First off, I have to say this. Star Wars is just a movie, and a whole lot of marketing around that movie. All that stuff is made up, and if you think it's more than that, you need to grow up." Then I'd just walk away. That's what I wanted to do, and a little part of me still sort of wishes I had done that. Because I'm no role model. Except that would make me an asshole. You know, let's put a pin in that point, and I'll come back to it down the line, okay? But right now, let me continue by saying that I recognize The Last Jedi has flaws. And there are moments that don't really make any sense. And Big Anklevich pointed out when we were podcasting one of those points that I couldn't address. He said, "Here's a plot hole." And I tried to fill it in, explain it away. And I couldn't. And my belief is that, honestly, this is not a plot hole, but a line or a scene was trimmed that would have explained it. I don't know why I'm saying this. The point I was trying to make was, I really enjoyed The Last Jedi. If I had time, I would go see it today. Shoot, I had planned to. 3 days ago, before I had ever heard character assassination Luke Skywalker, I had planned on hitting the theater today. And I wish I had, so it would all be fresh in my mind. But I loved the film because of what it did for me emotionally. It spoke to me. It moved me. It inspired me. And I'm not really exaggerating when I say, I don't need any more Star Wars movies after this. I guess that's where the angry fanboys and I are in agreement, isn't it? But I'm fine with what they gave me. I felt like this was a good way to go out. I'm tempted to go on a tangent and talk about Episode 9, the next one. Because what do you do in that film? I won't talk about that. One day I will get together with my friends and we will talk about it. But a big part, you know, I'm going to say the biggest part of what I liked about The Last Jedi involved Luke Skywalker. He was shown to have become bitter and kind of a crusty old hermit, sort of like old Ben Kenobi had become in the first Star Wars film. But worse, he had closed himself off to the Force. He had been The Last Jedi, And now, there were no more Jedi. And through the course of the film, he opens himself up again. He starts training Rey, I guess, a little bit. He tells her his reasoning for his self-imposed exile. And when she goes off to do what she can, he stays behind, with no way of getting off the planet. His X-Wing has been scuttled. And decides to destroy these sacred Jedi texts. And Master Yoda appears to him and tells him that Luke still has more to learn, and that failure is our greatest teacher. It's kind of a neat moment, those two together. And at the end of the movie, Luke Skywalker magically shows up to take on the First Order all by himself. He has a moment with Leia. He has a moment with 3PO. He has a moment with Kylo Ren. And while the remaining few members of the Resistance escape, Luke creates a diversion, focusing all the attention on him. It turns out that it's a projection, and he's used all of his life force to achieve this goal. And then he fades away, as Yoda did in Return of the Jedi. And we get this nice little coda at the end of the movie, which I know that people also hate, but oh well. This coda where there are children, which represent all of the children in the galaxy, telling inspiring stories about Luke Skywalker, this hero that they look up to. And one day, they too will rise and make a stand against injustice because of the example that Luke Skywalker set. Now, that's my interpretation of the movie, and that really spoke to me. I don't feel that's character assassination at all. I feel like they're showing us an unexpected, certainly, and there was a lot of unexpected stuff in this movie. Unexpected side to Luke. I think that most people expected him to have become this all-wise, prudent, venerable, respectable Jedi Master, similar to what Obi-Wan had become in Star Wars, or our image of what Yoda was like in The Empire Strikes Back. Nobody ever thinks of Yoda the way we first meet him. Nobody ever thinks of that mischievous, playful Yoda, because we never see that side of him again. Although, we get a bit of a visit from him in The Last Jedi, and it's neat to see it again. But we all assumed that that's what Luke would become, because by the end of Jedi, he's grown up. He's become the Jedi Knight. He's become somebody that's always going to do right. He's become the hero at the end of the story. And I feel like a lot of people, seeing a Luke 34 years older, freak out that he's still got flaws, that he's got rough edges, that he's not perfect. There's this moment when he drinks this green milk straight out of the teat of this basking alien walrus thing, and he grins while it's running down his beard. And that image is the poster boy for those who hate what's been done, for character assassination, Luke Skywalker. But me, I'm a writer. And as a writer, you want to come up with interesting things for your characters to experience, for them to feel, for them to see, for them to be. Somebody that does the right thing all the time is difficult to write about. In that case, you have to surround them with interesting characters that are flawed or weak or still learning. And those characters can make the perfect character come to life through how he or she deals with them. But here's the thing. Our heroes, the people that we look up to, that inspire us, that we worship, were people. and people are flawed. People are often disappointing. To themselves, even. Not just to you. Oh, gosh, I'm reminded. There was a story that came out a few years ago that Mother Teresa's journals had been acquired, and people were going through the writings in preparation to publish them. And they discovered that she had been very conflicted in her life, that she had doubts, that she was depressed a lot of the time, and that she even questioned the existence of God. And there was a bit of an outcry about this, of, oh, this person that we thought so much of, this great hero was nothing of the sort.
This Superman is nothing of the kind. I have found his weakness.
It was like, f*** Mother Teresa. She's no hero. But when I heard that, I was more impressed by Mother Teresa than I had been before I heard that. Because her weaknesses, her vulnerability, her doubt, made her more of a hero, more respectful, more... It made her a person. And you know, I'm not going to convince anybody that seeing Luke Skywalker with flaws, seeing Luke Skywalker with regrets, is better than what you had in your head. There's a moment where they flash back to reveal that Luke had considered killing his nephew because he saw the path ahead and saw that his nephew was going to cause great suffering. He considered doing it, and Kylo Ren saw that in his uncle's eyes, and it terrified him. We don't know the whole story, but if I were writing it, I'd say that that made the decision for him. He was going to embrace the dark side and kill a whole lot of the next generation's future. And Luke didn't do it. He chose not to do it. But the damage was done. Kylo Ren turned and killed a whole bunch of Luke's students. Now, we don't know who these students are. It's going to be up to somebody to fill in that backstory, to come up with who were these students, you know, create characters among them that we embrace and fear for. Probably not me, but I'd take the job. And who's to say that they weren't Luke's own children? His own bastard children. Kylo Ren killed all these kids and took a bunch of followers with him, whom I'm assuming we'll see again in Episode 9. And Luke considered that the deal breaker. There has to have been a moment where Luke talks to Han and or Leia and tells them what has happened. That he blames himself and he abandons everybody and he goes off on his own, essentially to live out the rest of his days, stewing in his guilt. And see, that's another thing where I can see people saying, oh, there's no hero. A hero would have stayed behind and cleaned up his own mess. We don't know the rest of the story. Maybe those people that are saying that are right. In which case, there's another flaw. There's another mistake Luke made. And ultimately, what happens in The Last Jedi is he steps forward. He makes this last sacrifice. And was it too little, too late? I wouldn't think Poe Dameron would say so. I don't think Resistance Tech Rose would say so. The handful of people that managed to survive and escape in the Millennium Falcon would say he helped them out. Rey, daughter of nobodies, helped too, of course. They got out and survived to maybe fight another day. We'll find out in December of 2019, of course. And then Luke died. And you know, putting it the way I'm putting it, I see the reason people would hate what was done with Luke Skywalker. And to that I ask, where was this outcry in 2005 when Darth Vader was character assassinated. You know, the nonsense and wasted potential in that movie was way, way worse than anything we got in this movie. Just the shoddy, illogical turn to the dark side that happened in that movie would be reason enough to hate it. But all we got was a meme of James Earl Jones saying, "No!" That was the loudest criticism of that film. And that James Earl Jones thing isn't even all that bad. I never understood so many people's focus on it as the worst thing in that movie, because it was far from it. And you know, years before that, I would hear people insist that Mark Hamill's delivery of, "No, that's not true, that's impossible," was over the top and sappy and embarrassing and the very definition of bad acting. People would say that. And that scene is the high point, the epitome of the Star Wars trilogy. Heck, even then, it might have been the scene of the whole Star Wars trilogy. I can't help but wonder, what would the reception of The Empire Strikes Back have been if the internet had existed in 1980? The fanboys would have absolutely excoriated it. I apologize for using that word. A fanboy. Not excoriated. F you. The word fanboy has become wholly negative lately. It represents the tight-fisted, loud, closed-minded, entitled Caucasian devotee to geek culture. But you know, I'm a fanboy, if anyone is. And am I a loathsome piece of shit? Well, maybe I am. So, let's use a different word than fanboy. And I'm not going to say neckbeard. That's a slur that's just unacceptable. It's ugly, and it's petty, and it attacks someone based on their physical appearance. And we don't do that anymore, because it's inherently wrong. Society, civilized society, has accepted this nowadays. And I can try to be part of society. So, I have to try to rid my vocabulary of my beloved racial slurs. And if I can do it, so can the rest of the country.
Except for you, sir. You're special.
So, I'll come up with a new word. The die-hard, angry Star Wars fan. In 1980, the diehards would have such a problem with how the movie went.
With the never-before-seen force power of moving things around in space with your mind, of a major character portrayed by an obvious Muppet, with an out-of-nowhere twist that makes absolutely no logical sense, with how raked over the coals the main character, all of the main characters were. Han, Leia, and Chewie are all tortured. C-3PO is mocked, blown to bits, carried around in pieces, somebody says Ichuta to him. Han is frozen in carbonite, which, according to those in the know, is super unpleasant. R2-D2 is covered in mud and eaten by some kind of space alligator, then barfed 20 feet into the air. Bosk is on screen for 2.5 seconds. Luke gets his face ripped off, nearly freezes to death, is pummeled, humiliated, maimed, and has his entire psyche shattered by this revelation of who his father is. And who was Anakin Skywalker in Luke's mind until that point? A pilot, yeah, but built up as something special, something big and important, as all absent parents are. Maybe I'll touch upon that the next time I write about him. And that's shattered. And then his only recourse is to kill himself. He somehow manages to survive that and is rescued by his friends. Well, he uses the Force to contact them, so that's a bit of a silver lining. But boy, is he schooled.
Then the movie ends, with the bad guys pretty much having won. But the good guys have lived to fight another day. And perhaps things will go their way next time. How dare Irvin Kershner and Lawrence Kasdan do this to George Lucas's beloved characters and universe? Oh, and what's this episode 5 bullshit? There's only one Star Wars in my mind.
I don't know. Time has proven The Empire Strikes Back not only resilient, but also the crown jewel in the Star Wars saga. And part of it is because it takes such enormous risks and left turns. And I feel The Last Jedi did take some pretty big risks. There are some left turns in there. And time will tell if those turn out to be right turns instead of just left ones. But I love Luke Skywalker more today than I loved him a year ago. Warts and all, Luke Skywalker is a hero to me. And part of why I love him is because he is so beaten and battered in The Empire Strikes Back. And people have been talking about this for going on 38 years. Han, Leia, and Chewie are tortured because it will bring Luke Skywalker into Vader's clutches. The Emperor had foreseen this. Or Vader, though I don't think we ever saw Vader being prescient. Had Luke stayed on Dagobah and completed his training, maybe this torture wouldn't have happened. I don't know. Who knows what would have happened had he stayed? All I know is only a fully trained Jedi Knight. All right, I'll do it.
Only a fully trained Jedi Knight with the Force as his ally can conquer Vader and his Emperor.
Luke makes mistakes and rushes off, and luckily it doesn't cost him his life, though it probably should have.
But a lifetime later, he stays and doesn't get further involved, perhaps replaying that earlier failure in his mind. Perhaps replaying all his earlier failures in his mind. And instead of me, you, thinking Luke is a wuss, we relate to him. We understand what he suffered and that some of that suffering was brought on by himself.
There's an arc there. And that arc is completed by the end of Return of the Jedi, when he says, "I'll never turn to the dark side. You have failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me." That's the climax of Luke's story. He passes the final test, where he briefly gives in to the dark side. And it feels good. Makes him powerful. But he pulls himself back from the brink and chooses not to give in to his evil heritage. Luke starts out as this whiny, immature, callow farm boy, which people also make fun of, calling him whiny or petulant or annoying. But that stuff holds so little water when you see what he becomes by the end of the trilogy. It almost seems like Lucas intended that, intended for Luke to start out that way. So by the end, we'd stand back and say, "Holy cow, look how far he's come." And now we get this new development in The Last Jedi. Because we got nothing in The Force Awakens. And I think some of the bad reception Last Jedi has gotten has to fall at J.J. Abrams' feet. Because Abrams loves to do this thing where he asks a question and doesn't answer it, at least for a while. He loves to see people think about the question, speculate about it, argue among themselves. he doesn't necessarily like to answer the question.
One of the things we talked about for 2 years was that a grave Luke was standing in front of? I mean, it certainly looked like a headstone he was facing when Ray came up to see him. If so, who is buried there? Did he have a son that Kylo Ren murdered? Did he have a daughter that he thought Kylo Ren murdered, but is actually alive and walking up the steps toward him? Did Mara Jade exist in this continuity? You start to think about it and wonder, who is buried there? Maybe there's a character we don't yet know about that he'll tell the story of. A teacher, or a friend, or a gay lover, and they're dead. And Luke visits their grave often. That question is never answered, because the grave is never seen again. And was it even a headstone? Maybe it was just a rock, and I convinced myself that it was noteworthy.
That's only one of at least a dozen questions that JJ asks, which either don't get answered in The Last Jedi, or were never important to begin with. And due to that, we have been talking about for 2 years something that was never intended to be significant. Who is Supreme Leader Snoke? Is he Mace Windu? Somehow back from the dead? Is he Darth Plagueis the Wise? Is he somehow Emperor Palpatine? Sort of back from the dead. Is he Darth Vader? Sort of back from the dead. Is he that Inquisitor character from Rebels? Is he that one barely seen Jedi in The Phantom Menace that we never saw again? Is he a failed clone of the Emperor? Is he an alien, actually 15 feet tall? Holy Snoke! Maybe he's that evil Jedi librarian Jocasta knew from Episode 2. Whatever happened to Kitster, Anakin's worthless little friend on Tatooine? That turned out to not be important. Somebody's going to answer that question. You know, who is Snoke? They explored it in a novel. Not me. Even if somebody actually donated to Marshall's podcast. Not me. But just like I said, somebody would explore Kylo Ren, his fall to the dark side, and the significance of the Knights of Ren. But of course, in this new movie, it apparently doesn't matter. It's not answered in The Last Jedi. It's just dismissed, as is Rey's parentage. It'll be interesting to see what JJ brings to the table when he does the next Star Wars. Because he's got to wrap it all up, decide which threads need to be tied and which ones he can just leave alone. And who knows, JJ being JJ, he may ask new questions that we will all be talking about for years to come. That's something that he enjoys, something that he does really, really well, that some find frustrating, but he doesn't care. If you're talking about last week's episode of Lost all the way up to the premiere of this week's episode of Lost, then in his mind, he has succeeded.
I guess I talked a little bit about why Luke is my hero. And since this is all introspective and masturbatory, I guess I ought to ask why I was okay with this cinematic treatment of Luke Skywalker, one of my heroes, but I was not okay with the cinematic treatment of Superman, another one of my heroes, in Man of Steel. Because there is a difference. Luke, in The Last Jedi, is like Wolverine in Logan. He's grouchy, he's beat down and broken, but with just enough of the old spark in him to rise up and give his life for the right cause in the end. Rian Johnson was telling the final Luke Skywalker story, with the weight of decades of adventures, both success and failure, on his back.
Zack Snyder was telling the first Superman story in a new, connected universe. Man of Steel was, let's throw out the legacy that this character has represented for 75 years. Let's try and make him a Superman of today. More importantly, more significantly, let's take a look at what people criticized about Superman Returns and make sure to do the opposite. We'll turn that on its ear. Let's reimagine him, not as a do-gooder, a Boy Scout, but as a flawed, selfish, grouchy loner. And yet, they wanted us to have our cake and eat it too, by referencing things from the Superman mythos that had gone before, that we had known all of our lives. For example, by him crossing a line and breaking a code that this Superman doesn't have when he kills General Zod. And yes, the utter disregard for property and innocent human life in that Metropolis battle was totally repellent. It made me want to stand up and say, this is not Superman! Superman would never do this! How dare you! But they hadn't set up that this Superman gave a crap about anyone or anything. So it shouldn't have been as damning as it was. I felt what I felt. And maybe there are people who felt that way about The Last Jedi. Luke Skywalker would never drink that green milk with a shaggy beard and then grin. How dare you?
Man of Steel was character assassination. But not just for Superman. There's the Ma and Pa Kent reimagining. The Pa Kent horseshit, for lack of a smellier word, was a slap in the face to the legacy of that character. To a decent, humble man who instilled in Clark a moral baseline that he would return to over and over again throughout his life. He has these godlike powers, yet because of his upbringing, and because of him himself, he doesn't misuse them. He looks out for the little guy. He looks out for everyone. And then Ma Kent has this line about, be their hero, Clark. Be their protector, their example, their savior. Or don't. Because you don't owe these people anything. And that's not just a slap in the face. That's spitting lukewarm green milk in the face of everything Martha Clark Kent has represented since they first thought to depict her back in the Superboy comics days.
I could never support that version of Superman. I never saw Batman v Superman, and I never saw Justice League, even when my sister's family was going all together. And people seemed affronted by that. There was this lady I know that asked me over and over if I'd seen Justice League yet, and when I would explain to her why I wasn't going to see it, she never accepted my answer. I was a comic book nerd. I should support that stuff. You live in Idaho. Why do you not own a copy of Napoleon Dynamite? I'm not sure what to tell you. I mean, maybe I should have seen it. Then I could speak authoritatively about that film, instead of just repeating what I've heard. So I could talk about what they got right and what they got wrong. I've read that they tried to turn Superman into actual truth, justice, and the American way Superman again. The guy that's square-jawed on the inside, not just on the outside. But I made my choice, and felt I only had integrity if I stuck to my guns. You vote with your dollar, as my film professor used to say. Yet, the hurt I felt, being betrayed so by Man of Steel, hasn't gone away. And I would never want to feel that again. Look, if there are people who feel that hurt by what Rian Johnson did with Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm not going to parrot that guy from the Comic-Con that said, you need to grow up. And you know what? Looking at that person in the line, I'm sure he's had difficulties in his life. He seemed limited. So he does not deserve my ill will toward him. And I'm glad that I didn't stand up and say, Star Wars is just a movie and you should grow up. Because... And it suddenly feels like we've reached the end of this rant. Star Wars is not just a movie. It's more than that. It's a bedrock with which people have based their morality, have based who they are, in the same way that a religious person would describe themselves as, I am a... First and foremost, that's how they see themselves. That's how they think of themselves. Or a person that's of a particular ethnic descent, or hails from a particular region of the globe. I am a Bostonian. I am a Guamanian. I am Spartacus. That is the effect that the Star Wars saga had on people. A lot of people. That's the effect that it had on me. Many of the things that I think, many of the ways that I look at the world, a lot of the feelings I feel are because of my cultural background. There was a big news story back a few years when people in the Australian census put down Jedi as their religion. That many people would do that meant that it was more than just a mid-budget B science fiction movie. It has affected me. Now, in my middle age, it affects me every single day, probably as much as when I was 10 years old. And I used to draw TIE fighters in my spelling tests and try my hand at fan fiction, usually giving up after two or three pages. Some things never change. Luke Skywalker was a childhood hero of mine. Once I was no longer a child, now that I needed to grow up, he remained a hero of mine. And now that I have seen him character assassinated in Star Wars, The Last Jedi. He's still a hero of mine. It makes me want to write something that touches people. To create something that inspires people in the way that stuff inspired me. Well, granted, who can say that? I mean, unless your last name is Rowling, you're never going to affect people on such a scale as those George Lucas characters did. But you can still affect people, from a handful to thousands to one. And I hope that I can do that. I would like to create something that speaks to people as I was spoken to, as I am spoken to, by this universe, by these characters, by these scenarios, enough that somebody somewhere would think about it, long after putting down the book or walking out of the movie theater or kicking in the television set. To sit down and try and put into words why they feel the way that they do. I would hope, if that were the case, that the person responded to my character's weaknesses as well as their strengths, their fears as well as their courage, their rough edges as well as their beauty. I hope that would be the case. That's something to look forward to. One day, when I grow up. Rish Outfield, Jedi Knight.
So there you go. There's Rish talking about character assassination, Luke Skywalker. And again, you may have heard this in other places, and this may not be the first time you've heard of it. You might have even skipped the episode because you've heard it elsewhere. But hopefully you've stuck around long enough. As I said earlier, Rish asked if I could add a little bit of an afterword to his essay. And at first I thought, what more can I add to his excellent words? I've always felt that Rish was more passionate about things than I was. Or maybe at least in his outward expression. But then I decided to copy his effort and to sit down and write something about Luke Skywalker, rather than just blather on as I typically do. I found that I, too, have a lot of passion for this character. Some of it may echo what Rish has already said, but so be it. But before I get into that, I wanted to address something else that Rish brought up in his essay. Rish wondered what the reception of The Empire Strikes Back would have been if the internet had existed in 1980. Well, let me tell you, I was there. I was lucky enough to see The Empire Strikes Back in a theater. And then I suppose I was unlucky enough to have to wait 3 years to see how it was resolved in The Return of the Jedi. But yeah, I was there. I remember loving the movie, especially the Imperial Walkers, or the AT-ATs. I loved everything on Hoth, really. The Han and Leia stuff was okay too, but I didn't appreciate the romance and the subtle character development back then. You know, I was only 10. Later in life, most of that became just as amazing to me. But at the time, it was Luke Skywalker who I cared about the most. I loved his training with Yoda. I loved the lightsaber battle where Luke confronted Vader for the first time. Oh man, I can't even tell you how exciting that was. It was unbelievable. And then, of course, the big reveal. No, I am your father. I echoed Luke's sentiments. That's not true. That's impossible. I was reeling through the rest of the movie, and then it was just over. I walked out of the theater stunned, not knowing quite how to feel about it. It was so different from Star Wars, much slower paced, much more introspective. Sound familiar? I knew I liked the movie, but there was so much unresolved. What was going to happen to Han Solo? And I was frustrated. I was frustrated with Luke for leaving Dagobah. I was frustrated with Luke for starting to believe Vader. I was frustrated that I had no idea what was going to happen. I wanted to watch it again right away to see what I had missed. But back to Risha's question, what would the reception of Empire Strikes Back have been if the internet existed in 1980? Well, the internet in 1980 was contained in letter columns of fan magazines. I found a really cool article on acriticalhit.com, and I'll put the link in the show notes. But they wrote a great article where they cited letters from Starlog magazine encapsulating fan reactions. I'll only talk about a few of them. The first is from Robert L. Beatty Scarola. He says, "Is Luke related to Vader? Most think so now that Vader came right out and said it. Well, I say, do you believe everything you hear? Vader may have lied just to enlist Luke to his side. Vader would then dispose of Luke once he got what he wanted." Oh, man, I was with you, Robert. Don't listen to those suckers who think that Vader is Luke's father. Ben said Vader killed Luke's father. Why would he lie about that? Well, until 1983, when Yoda whispered, "Your father, he is." I was with you. There were also, of course, critics of Empire. Sean Bernard said, "I knew they wanted to leave something to settle in other sequels, but they left a little too much. For instance, Han Solo's predicament. The movie should not have ended until Han was either killed by Boba Fett or Jabba, or rescued by Lando Calrissian or Chewbacca. The former, preferably. Also, the fate of Bespin is not told. Was it taken by Lando's troops? Taken by Imperial troops? Or destroyed by Vader?" Actually, I guess I never really thought about that. To this day, do we know what happened to Bespin after Lando abandoned them? Did Lobot survive? What about Wilro Hood and his ice cream shop? Well, here's another fan reaction. And I love this one. This one's so good. Jeanette Vogelpohl said, I should have had Renee do this. Somebody should tell Harrison Ford that when a woman tells a man I love you, I know is not the acceptable response. That scene was not funny. It was infuriating. One of the greatest lines in cinema. Being maligned in the pages of Starlog magazine back in 1980. Good stuff. Good stuff. You know, I wonder how would have The Empire Strikes Back have scored on Rotten Tomatoes? What would the audience score have been? Well, I guess at this point we can only speculate. Anyway, back to The Last Jedi, and more importantly, Luke Skywalker. So, of course, as Rish pointed out, many people have had a hard time dealing with the portrayal of Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. I am not one of them. I enjoyed seeing Luke struggle with his failures and his crisis of faith. I was certainly surprised. This was not what I had envisioned for the Luke Skywalker who fought Vader on the second Death Star, who told the Emperor, "I am a Jedi like my father before me," who faced death and incited his father to turn back toward the light. We expected him to be an old and wise Jedi master, similar to Kenobi, who had advanced in Jedi skills and an advanced perspective of the universe. So I've tried to weed out all of the truly hateful feedback from the, what did Rish call them? The diehard, angry Star Wars fans. However, I have also tried to listen to the opinions of people who are not just trying to spew venom. Those who are respectful of the franchise and its creators, including Rian Johnson, but who honestly struggle with the direction Luke took in The Last Jedi. Another Star Wars podcast that I listen to sometimes is Rebel Force Radio. And one of the frequent guests that I like to hear from is Paul Bateman. And to quote the Rebel Force Radio website, Paul Bateman is a film professional and artist living in London. Paul worked closely with the legendary Star Wars concept artist Ralph McQuarrie and is a steward of his legacy. Paul has worked on many films produced in the London area and even appeared as an extra on Star Wars Episode III Revenge of the Sith as Mina Tills. I guess I'll have to look that up. Paul is the host of Rebel Force Radio's Star Wars Influences podcast. Let's listen to a part of what Paul had to say here.
Your father's Adolf Hitler and you continue the cheek and see the possibility for redemption. This is a guy who's had like an extra sort of 30 years of training or something. So he's supposed to be even more advanced, not gone backwards. You know, he's had all these years. I mean, he was already at the level at Return of the Jedi that he should have been able to cope with this. But 30 years later, he hasn't got the brains to kind of realize that this is just a perception of how things might work out. Like he could confront, confront Hitler and kind of go, there's still a chance for this guy, but he couldn't confront like an angry emo and kind of go, okay, maybe I need to think about this. Like to just draw a sword on him and turn into a psycho to me, even for a minute. I know that Rian, you know, very deftly wrote this in that it was like a moment of failure for him. And that to me makes it much more excusable as a threat. I can kind of see that. But my gut reaction was like, oh my God, they've just made Luke turn into an idiot.
There you go. Paul makes some good points here. You know, if Luke can personally face down Vader and the Emperor, why, 30 years later, can't he handle a spoiled nephew with daddy issues? Well, I have some answers for that, but first I also wanted to replay a bit of audio from an interview with Mark Hamill, who is, of course, Luke Skywalker himself. Mark Hamill has famously struggled with this new direction for the character that has practically defined his professional life, besides the Joker. Here's what Mark had to say.
Rian, I said, Jedis don't give up. I mean, even if he had a problem, he would maybe take a year to try and regroup. But if he made a mistake, he would try and right that wrong. So right there, we had a fundamental difference. But it's not my story anymore. It's somebody else's story. And Rian needed me to be a certain way to make the ending effective. That's the crux of my problem. I'm talking about the George Lucas Star Wars. This is the next generation of Star Wars. So I almost had to think of Luke as another character. Maybe he's Jake Skywalker. He's not my Luke Skywalker. But I had to do what Rian wanted me to do because it serves the story well. But listen, I still haven't accepted it completely, but it's only a movie. I hope people like it. I hope they don't get upset. And I came to really believe that Ryan was the exact man that they needed for this job.
There you go, Rish. See, it's just a movie. But again here, you know, what is Mark saying? Jedis don't give up, right? Luke wouldn't do this. To paraphrase, this ain't your father's Luke Skywalker. As an actor who developed this character under the tutelage of George Lucas, it is hard for Mark to wrap his head around the Luke Skywalker that Rian Johnson has developed for this movie, or for the legacy of Star Wars, I guess. He has had to differentiate it in his mind as a different character altogether. Do you think Rian Johnson's new trilogy will explore the adventures of Jake Skywalker? I don't know. But honestly, I get it, man. I understand where some fans are struggling with this sharp character shift in Luke. This is not the Luke Skywalker we saw defeat the Empire in Return of the Jedi. And he's had 30 years to evolve further as a Jedi. Paul Bateman made the point that these are mythic characters. They are supposed to be more than human. And yes, from that perspective, I get it. But on the other hand, I guess I just don't share that same attachment. As an aspiring storyteller and just even as a fan, I like the fact that Luke is fallible, that he's going through this trial of faith. Not so much a trial of faith in the Force. You know, I mean, he's seen and done too much to deny that, but he's lacking faith in his place in the Force, the role he should play or has played within it. Perhaps he doesn't feel worthy to be its only master. Maybe even the concept of being a master of the Force is arrogant. You know, as a person of faith, I can totally relate to that. You know, I could probably go off on that tangent for a while, but this is only supposed to be an afterword, and I've already probably gone beyond the limits of that. So I'll resist that tangent. But let's take a look at a quick tour, if you will, of Luke's history with the Force and the Jedi. You know, first off, Luke is not a classic Jedi. He was never part of the Jedi Order. He grew up to his very late teens, not even knowing what the Force was. You know, the Jedis were merely a legend to him. Well, then those troublesome droids led Luke to Ben Kenobi, who tells Luke that he was once a Jedi Knight, same as his father. The old man shows him a lightsaber and tells him there is some force that binds the galaxy together. Luke follows Kenobi on a quest to save the princess, gets a quick lesson with the Force and a lightsaber on the Millennium Falcon. And then before you know it, Ben is killed or disappears into the Force. However, Ben's voice later convinces Luke to use the Force to destroy the Death Star. You know, later, as we know, Force Ghost Ben sends Luke to Dagobah to complete his training in the Force from Yoda. But just as Luke starts to learn something and control his emotions, he gets a vision and goes off to save Han and Leia at the protest of both of his masters. He faces Vader and gets beaten down in every way possible. Oh, and by the way, he learns that Vader is his dad. Somehow, he then trains himself to build his own lightsaber and master other Force abilities. When he returns to visit Yoda, Luke is told, "No more training do you require." Before Yoda disappears into the Force, he tells Luke, "When gone am I, the last of the Jedi will you be, and pass on what you have learned." As I said earlier, Luke then goes off to confront Vader again and the Emperor. He redeems his father, to some degree, who then destroys the Emperor. This initiates the end of the Empire. You know, he's won. He's done it, right? But, you know, after Return of the Jedi, Luke is literally the last Jedi. The future of the Jedi relies squarely on his shoulders, and his shoulders alone. Well, except maybe sister. But regardless, that is quite a burden to carry. But apparently, based on what we've been told, Luke gave it the old Beggar's Canyon try. You know, he found a temple, he sought out students, including his nephew Ben Solo, and started passing on the ways of the Jedi. Ben Solo. That still bugs me. Why would Han and or Leia name their son Ben? They didn't have Luke's connection to... But I digress. Did Force Ghost Ben help Luke out at that point? You know, I don't know. You know, when Yoda showed up on Ahch-To in The Last Jedi, Luke acted like he hadn't seen him since Endor. I think he was on his own, with only legend to go on. Had he even heard the words midichlorian or Padawan? Oh, never mind. It's probably better if he hadn't. But what I'm trying to get at is that Luke had a lot of pressure to rebuild the Jedi Order, and he was relatively inexperienced. Then when Kylo, okay, fine, Ben, started getting pulled to the dark side, and Luke visited his bedside and saw how evil his nephew was truly becoming and how much Snoke had influenced him, and he was terrified. And for a moment, he panicked and considered taking Ben's life. It was just a brief moment, but that was enough to seal Kylo's resolve to the dark side and all of Ben Solo's trust in Luke, in the Jedi, and in his parents was gone. He became Kylo Ren and formed the Knights of Ren. You know, I still want to know more about these Knights of Ren. You know, without any more information, I kind of picture them as to be like the Nazgul, right? Like the Ringwraiths from Lord of the Rings. Anyway, back to Luke. You know, at this point, just Luke is devastated. His students have either turned to the dark side or been killed. His temple is in ruins. He is once again the last Jedi. And now it's not just him against the world or the Empire. It's him against his own failure. It's him against the evil he created, at least in his mind. I mean, this is worse than Kenobi and Vader. You know, Anakin made his own choices and became Vader. Luke felt responsible for creating Kylo Ren. And how could he face his sister and his best friend? You know, they trusted him with their son. And, you know, what was he thinking? He couldn't restart the Jedi. He wasn't good enough. He wasn't Yoda. And maybe the Jedi were not such a good thing. Maybe the Force would be better off without them. Luke Skywalker, you know, he was broken. He was beaten. Again, I don't think Luke lost faith in the Force. He lost faith in himself. He felt strongly enough about it that he not only fled to an uncharted planet, he completely cut himself off from the Force. And I think it was too hard for him to stay in touch with the Force and know what was going on in the galaxy. He didn't trust himself not to get involved and make matters worse. You know, maybe you don't like that version of Luke. I get that. You know, maybe he wasn't maybe he was supposed to be more than human and let wisdom always lead his path. Maybe he wasn't supposed to give up. But he did. Have you ever looked up to someone and found out that they struggle and have faults just like you? Was it disappointing? Sure. But that doesn't mean it's not valid or real. And yes, I know that Luke is a fictional character. And Rian Johnson wrote a script that depicted Luke in this light. This was a conscious choice in character development. But it speaks to me. You know, can you remember a time when you were at the height of your power, when the future was bright, when everything seemed to be going your way, and you were full of purpose and vision? You know, that was Luke Skywalker at the end of Return of the Jedi. But add 5 or 10 or 20 or, say, 30 years to the time when you were on top of the world. Was everything coming up roses? Was your life devoid of struggles or defeats or failures? Not mine. You know, life is often hard. Things don't always go your way. But these experiences can make us better and stronger. You know, it's how we react to those failures that mean the most. And you know, Luke was struggling for a while. He was on the ropes. He needed Rey just as much or more than Rey needed him. Think about it this way. Luke is still on his hero's journey in this movie. His destiny was not set after his success at Endor. know, he still had struggles to face and lessons to learn.
The greatest teacher failure is,
Yoda tells him. You know, and like Rish said, Luke comes through in the end. He pulls it together and saves the day. It's another moment to shine, and it means more because of what he had to overcome to achieve it. Not only did Luke give time to the Resistance fighters to escape from Crait, not only did Luke defeat Kylo Ren, or at least teach him a lesson in humility, maybe? I don't know. But Luke Skywalker became a legend again. A spark, if you will, to inspire the entire galaxy. You know, his heroics on Crait will resonate with present and future generations who will also, like Rish says, rise up and make a stand against injustice. And Luke does this all at the sacrifice of his own life. This was his swan song. He went out on his own terms, and like his Jedi masters before him, he disappears into the Force. It was a beautiful and profound goodbye to this beloved character. Well done, Rian Johnson. Thank you. You know, and I guess in the words of Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. Well, for now anyways. So, this is Marshall Latham, Red 6, standing by. The Journey Into Podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.